There are a lot of things that matter to me. Family, community, culture, and peace of mind. Hi, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and when balancing life, I have to say nothing brings more comfort than having support. And when it comes to ensuring those things that matter to you the most, State Farm offers the support with an agent available in person or on the phone to discuss your coverage options. Support when you need it, however you choose. That's State Farm's way. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Steady living life as a gringo, where you question where you fit in every time you mingle. They say you do this with not enough that.
My rapping is really bad.
This life as a gringo.
Yes, hello and welcome to another episode of Life as a Gringo. I am Dramos, of course. And man, it is April. We are in the midst of Financial Literacy Month. And I'm so excited to bring you today's conversation. I've been holding on to it for a little bit and I've been wanting to drop it because it's just such an amazing episode. And if you've been following the show, you know how passionate I am about financial literacy, particularly when it comes to our community. For me personally, you know, I was one of those people who, like many of us, weren't taught about finances. You know, my parents didn't know. My grandmother didn't believe in credit cards. Money was under the mattress, right? And of course, my mom inherited zero financial knowledge. So we always sort of we're living in this place where money was a point of contention in our family. And for me, the cycle sort of continued on in my 20s until I began to be a bit more educated and was lucky enough to be around people who sort of had their stuff together in that way. And as a result, I was able to do the really difficult work of, you know, building my credit up from 500 to, in just a few years, being able to then get a property purchased by myself, you know, a dream that I never thought would happen, you know, unless I was like married with a wife with great credit and everything would go under her name. That was sort of my sort of plan, because I felt like financially I could never get myself together, right? I just thought I would continue on the cycle. And what I've realized is how important education is and these conversations around money and finances are, particularly again when our community is sort of behind in many ways when it comes to the idea of building generational wealth, the idea of living a comfortable life and not having to you know, sort of break your back to just have the bare minimum, you know. And my guest today is speaking to all of that. I've had her on the show before, but now she's officially an author. Gigi, the first gen mentor. She just dropped a book called Cultura and Cash, Lessons from the First Gen Mentor for Managing Finances and Cultural Expectations. And I'm just so impressed by this project and I'm excited to bring you this conversation as a whole, but I would like to preface it and say that I love it because she's speaking our language, right? She's literally talking like a prima, like a cousin, a friend, a sister, somebody you grew up with, right? And breaking down financial tips in ways that are relevant to how many of us grew up. And she also tackles the sort of problem that many of us have when it comes to boundaries and our family, right? And having to have financial boundaries, right? And having those difficult conversations with family members who maybe don't have their stuff together and, you know, figuring out if you're able to help them or not, or if you're comfortable with it or not, right? She really just tackles this whole idea of getting your finances together from, you know, a practical stance, but I think also on a deeper level, a sort of personal and culturally sort of spiritual way as well, which I absolutely love, you know. And again,
for many of us who didn't grow up with this knowledge readily available, books like this are such a gem. And I'm so excited to bring it to you for Financial Literacy Month. So without further ado, my conversation with Gigi, the first gen mentor, as a part of our Mi Gente segment.
Mi Gente.
My guest today, friend of the show, an incredible content creator, and now author of the new book, Cultura and Cash, Lessons from the First Gen Mentor for Managing Finances and Cultural Experiences. Gigi, the First Gen Mentor, how you feeling?
Hey, John Lowe's. I'm feeling good. Thank you for having me back on the show. And it's funny, you're one of the few people on the podcast that I've been on that can actually pronounce the book name. Everybody else is like, Cultura Cash. It's like, oh God, just give up.
Well, it's good. I mean, I have enough practice. We're on the My Cultura podcast network, and I try to do my best to put on and be able to roll the R's, you know, a little bit here and there.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
So listen, I mean, we were kind of talking about this off mic, but it's incredible to see this whole process kind of unfold. Cause I feel like I had you on our podcast here about a year ago, right?
And last summer.
Last summer. So before anything was announced for the book, I'm sure all of it was in the works as that was going on. This has got to be a crazy kind of ride. I mean, you've gotten co-signs from all types of big name people within the entertainment industry. You're, you know, doing the whole press tour, you're doing book tours, you're doing all these things, and you're a first-time author. I mean, how has this kind of whirlwind experience happened and felt for you, moving from like content creation stuff to now being out there with a book with your name on it?
You know, I really appreciate this question because the only person that asked me this is my therapist. So I'm glad to have a space outside of therapy to be able to share this. It's been a whirlwind. That first week, and they had warned me. They're like, that first week, you just don't know. It's just so wild. And I kicked it off with inviting family, my aunt and my uncle, to come into Chicago for the first time. I put them up in a hotel nearby and we did some touristing things around the city. That was fun. But, you know, entertaining is always kind of energy draining, right?
Sure. Yeah, of course.
And then on Monday, I had a book launch party here in Chicago. So it was an intimate event. I think I had like 50 people, but I had a piñata with my book cover, taco bar, drinks, just time to celebrate, like, that I did a thing, right? And then the next day, Tuesday, is launch day. So launch day is when it goes public. And I had a big reveal that day that I had been keeping in my back pocket. So I had been dripping the endorsement of all the amazing 14 women who had endorsed my book. You know, people like Janice from Yo Quiero Dinero, the founder of the Mujerista, Marivet. Even I got my shiro, Katya Echazarreta, the first Mexican-born woman to go to space. So I reached out to a lot of people, but the last one was being Eva Longoria, that I got her endorsement. So people were already excited about the book. And then when I dropped that the day of, they were like, oh my God, like I already was excited about this book. And now it's like Eva Longoria is attached to it. She's co-signed it. Yeah, so... So it was a whirlwind of a week, but so rewarding, and it's slowed down. Thank goodness. You know, people are still excited about the book, and at this point, people have had a chance to read it. So I've gotten Amazon reviews and DMs, and that feels good to know that the message is resonating with my readers.
That's beautiful, and yeah, I want to also just kind of talk about maybe even imposter syndrome that might come up, because this is a big moment, right? I know, like, even for me, sometimes I could just get like a good news email and I have to look away and I can't answer or read it fully because it just makes me uncomfortable, right? I can't like appreciate it or live in the moment. It doesn't feel real. I don't feel worthy at times. So I'm curious, for you, did you deal with any sort of imposter syndrome? I mean, especially as like you say you're Shiro and then somebody like Eva Longoria co-signing it, and you're having people whose job is to sort of help you bring the word out about this book now, right? There's a team behind it. Any feelings of imposter syndrome that you might have been going through during this whole process of you know, releasing your first book?
Not at all. And the reason for that is because all that self-doubt was during the writing process when I was alone.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, when I was alone with my MacBook typing it up, that's when those feelings are like, who am I to write this? Is this going to hit? Are people going to think I'm being too critical of our culture? Those feelings were all had there, right? But I've I mean, I finished writing the first draft in January of 2023. And then in the spring and summer, I did several rounds of editing. So I didn't stop like putting pen to paper probably till November. November. Yeah. And then it started going into production and they started printing copies. So I mean, this project has been in the works for me. I've been showing up every day for this project for a year and a half. So I know how much work, blood, sweat, and tears I put into this. So when it came to the day of and the week of and the press that I'm getting, there's no imposter syndrome because I know how hard it's been. And people don't know, you know, because you don't want to go on social media and complain about stuff, right? Like we're lucky to be in a place where we get to share our lives with others. But writing was a very lonely experience. And people are like, when's the second book? I'm like, I have PTSD from the first one.
Writing is tough, you know, because I think it's easy. You start kind of like, I'm sure you're energized by the product. You kind of like shoot out of the gate. But eventually, kind of like, you know, somewhat halfway through, it becomes like this arduous sort of task that you now have to sit down and do. And then you overanalyze every little thing. And then it's like, oh, this day feels like a waste because my writing was crap today. And I think that's like the hard part that not a lot of people sort of talk about is like getting past that middle ground where I'm sure the self-doubt creeps up. And also just like you overjudge yourself and get out of the flow state that you kind of started with to begin with, I think.
Yeah. You know, what was really helpful for me was that I got support. I hired a book coach and I was able to afford that because I won a $50,000 grant. Shout out to TikTok Macro and Unbelievable who sponsored the grant that allowed me to invest in this project. So I hired my book coach. She costs almost 20 grand. So, you know, a nice chunk of change.
Sure.
But I needed that support because I've never written a book before. So how was I supposed to know what I was going to go through? So I worked with her for 6 months. We met twice a month and I had access to her via WhatsApp. And she was instrumental in helping me flesh out my outline because I'm like, this is what I think I want to write about. She's like, do it in this order instead, right? Because as an experienced author herself and somebody who's ghostwritten books and has been a book coach for a long time, she had that expertise that I didn't have because I've never written a book. So yeah, she helped me come up with my outline. She helped me come up with a writing plan that was realistic. Because then again, I'm like, what's realistic? Is 500 words realistic? Is 5,000 words realistic?
Sure.
And you kind of learned like your rhythm. And on top of that, the emotional toll that I mentioned, right? The self-doubt. Mm-hmm. She really was able to kind of be my cheerleader and help me remember why I was doing this, the mission behind my book, you know, which is to be spreading financial accessible and jargon free financial education to the Latina community, specifically first gen. So that was very helpful, especially because I had health challenges. I don't know if you know this. I had health challenges during the writing process. I had surgery. So like I mentioned, I stopped, I finished my first draft in March. The book was, in January of 2023. The book was supposed to be out in September in time for Hispanic Heritage Month. That was always the plan. But what happened was in February, I landed in the ER. I had a large fibroid, which is like a mass on my uterus. Mm-hmm. It's very common, especially for Black women. And they run in my family. So I knew that I was going to get one eventually. So I had to go major abdominal surgery. Basically, I got a C-section done with no baby. Wow. So they took out the fibroid, they took out my uterus, and that put me out for 6 or 8 weeks. It's, you know, just like when a mom gives birth and she stops going to work for like 2 months. That was basically me, except I had no baby. It was just the recovery from my surgery. Yeah. And that was hard to re-engage with my book because I felt betrayed by the universe because I'm like, I had done everything right to get this published in time for Hispanic Heritage Month and for my health to now delay the process. And the book isn't going to be out till January. I was so mad at life and I'm just like, screw this. And again, thank goodness for my book coach. That's like, stuff happens and you've done so much work already. Like think about all that's on the other side of the mountain, right? And that you've already worked halfway there. And that was so important because, like I said, I was very bitter. I mean, obviously, I didn't feel good with a cut in my stomach. So that was, I would have given up then. So that's why I always love to give her flowers because I didn't do this alone. I did this with the help of a book coach.
Yeah, that, wow, that's, I appreciate you sharing that. I think I remember we had to like reschedule, I think, the original interview we did last year because you were, I think, still recovering. So I do remember something was going on during that time. I didn't realize, to the extent. And yeah, I mean, I think that's like a practice and almost just surrendering in life's plan and rolling with it almost, right? And, you know, the idea that you can have all these things planned out and you could have all your ducks in a row, but, you know, life be life. And sometimes and you just got to kind of roll with it and be okay with it and trust that it's probably going to be for the best at the end of the day.
I know. Life has taught me over and over that everything happens for a reason. But at that time, it was very hard to see the reason. But now I see the reason. The reason was I actually had space between the summer and between my book launch to go on vacation, specifically on an overdue honeymoon. I was married during the pandemic and obviously with all our travel restrictions, we never got to travel abroad. So we still were trying to go on a honeymoon and we're like, oh, I have this space in October where I actually don't have work. And so we went to Spain. We went to Spain for 2 weeks and that was fabulous. And it was a nice reset for all the work that I had to do for the book launch. So I'm like, that's why the universe knew that I kind of needed a break. I couldn't just keep going. And just being abroad, disconnecting from social, from work, really, really gave me that reset that I needed. Because a book launch is a beast. It's no easy feat.
I can only imagine. I mean, well, what was the process of getting published? Because I know you had the TikTok creator fund, right, that you had gotten a nice chunk of change from. Are you putting out independently? How did this whole thing kind of get to the point now where it's physically here, it's but also gaining book. The attention?
So typically, for anybody that doesn't know the publishing world, which I didn't until I became an author, there's three paths to publishing. So the number one path that most people know is traditional publishing, and that's when you get a book deal. So like Penguin Random House will offer you a book deal. They'll give you an advance to write the book. And then they essentially own the book because they bought you out, right? But a lot of people try to go that route because then they cover all the production costs of the book. Then you also get bragging rights of like, I was given a book deal and I'm a published author. Yeah, so it's very much bragging rights. And then the other path on the other end of the spectrum is self-publishing. Self-publishing is just like what it sounds like. You DIY it. You upload everything yourself on like Amazon, KDP, and it's very accessible. And I love self-publishing because before there were these gatekeepers that if you had a book idea, you had to go through these gatekeepers. And if they didn't think it was good enough or if they didn't think it was relevant, your idea never made it to people's hands. So the fact that in the last 15 years, self-publishing is now an option is really great, especially for like minority or independent authors. And then, the middle ground, which is the route I took, is called hybrid publishing. So with hybrid publishing, you essentially pay the publisher to write your book. Not to write your book, to produce your book. So remember with the traditional publisher, they pay you and they own the rights. With hybrid publishing, with what I did, I paid them. And it was a significant amount. Happy to be transparent about that. I mean, when I first hired them, I think I paid them $35K. And I've added on additional services, like additional marketing. I've added the audiobook production. I forget what else I've added, but I'm pretty sure I'm like at 50K, if not a little bit more, 50K for the book. And so even though it's a lot of money, the good thing, and this is very important to me, is that with hybrid publishing, you own all the rights to your book. You get final say on cover, title, and most importantly, content, editorial. So that means that if my editor didn't agree with me, it didn't matter. It was whatever I said because I paid for this production, right? And I knew that this book had to be said in a very certain way. And I did not want to be, you know, censored or whitewashed by a white publisher, because that's all there is. So I'm so thankful for the grant because it allowed me to write the book that my reader needed to hear and not some white palatable version, right? That some publisher would have been happy with. And it's funny, even my editor, even though, again, I'm paying you. I'm paying you as editor. She did try to kind of like, hey, this is a little divisive. I think you should get rid of this. I'm like, nope, you don't get it. For example, I was talking about how part of the reason why we weren't taught financial literacy growing up is because our parents have mistrust of financial systems because abroad, you know, they maybe their banking system wasn't as regulated. I know that's the story for my Mexican family, that they feel that all the banks are crooks because they deposit money and then half the money's gone. They're like, what happened to my money? And they're like, oh, well, it's whatever, whatever. So they bring that mistrust here. And then I said, and to make matters worse, when they do have to go into these banks in America, they don't really get the support of bilingual speakers. So when the extent of somebody's Spanish is, and I wrote un poquito, when the extent of somebody's Spanish is un poquito, I'm like, no wonder our parents don't feel that they can trust, you know, people who can't even speak to them in their own language. And this editor was like, I don't understand, like, they get like non like Spanish speakers, like, why don't you just write poquito like the right way? Why are you saying it poquito phonetically? And I said, you don't get it. You don't get it. And, and you know, and I'm glad that I, cause at first I was questioning myself. I'm like, well, she's the editor. She's the expert. This is just my first book. What do I know? And I'm glad that I stood by my vision and my reader and my mission. And I said, it's going to stay because this is how I talk. This is how I communicate to my people. And people love that. People DM me and they tell me that they chuckle at that part. Everybody that hears that part, they're like, cause they get it. They know what I'm trying to say, you know? So it's interesting process.
I appreciate your transparency because not a lot of people would talk about that middle ground. Because so it's funny is I had written like a like some draft of a book, right? And a company had wanted to do that same kind of middle ground publishing. But this is why it's so important to talk to people and to have people who are doing different things and that you can learn from around you. Because for me, I went into my defense mode was like, oh, this is a fucking scam, basically, is what I thought of it as.
There are some that are.
Sure. But I was like, this just doesn't sound right to me. I'm paying you to put out the book and you're marketing, whatever the hell you're providing me to editor. But like, this just seems weird. But it's also good to know, like I said, it's beautiful to have this kind of access and dialogue, and why it's great to ask questions because, you know, I mean, I have to obviously vet them even more. It could be a scam. But it's good to know that this is even a thing because, like you said, there are so many... Yeah, there have been so many gatekeepers in general into the avenues available to all of us to get our voices heard. And it's why people who look like you and I or come from our backgrounds haven't been heard, because we are fresh out here doing it for the first time. And you and I are in a privileged position where we have access to people who have maybe done it before. But, you know, like I said, I was like, nope, this is a scam and you know, whatever. I'm not going to be able to put out my book because these are the only people that were interested in working with me or whatever it was. So I appreciate you being transparent.
Yeah, I would also like to share that in the beginning, I was planning to self-publish because that's the cheapest route to publish a book.
Sure.
But I decided against it because I met with many self-published authors and I saw their book. I bought their book. And you can tell a difference between a self-published book and a book that was published by a traditional publisher that's been doing it for decades, if not centuries, right? So I knew that I wanted to put out a high quality product. And for me, hybrid publishing was going to deliver a product that could stand next on the book, on a bookshelf, stand next to a traditionally published book and hold its ground, right? Because it looks professional. And I know for a fact that Eva Longoria would have never given me her endorsement if it would have been a self-published book, because that was part of the vetting process. Who are you publishing with? How will this be distributed? I even though I hybrid published, I also went through the Fast Company Press imprint. So Fast Company magazine has a way to publish books, and that for sure played a factor, right? Because people know the Fast Company name. So there's pros and cons to every sort of publishing method. It's just important for you to evaluate your goals and again what your budget is. And I was very fortunate to win this grant for this dream project and to be able to invest in it the way that I wanted to.
It's beautiful. All right, I'm going to hop in here real quick. We'll take a quick break and then we'll...
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey, everyone. It's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura podcast network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Be right back. All right, we are back. So let's actually get into the book itself here, because there's a lot I want to touch on. And I love how, I'm going to touch on a few things, but I do love how you sort of didn't hold any punches at times to calling out our own community on our bullshit to a degree as well. So I am going to get to that. We'll start a little bit lighter, and let's talk about the idea of privilege.
Okay. Right. Sure.
Let's start there, because you have in the book, privilege is real. Right. And obviously we're sort of talking about that with some of the pushback you got from the editor and things like that, them not sort of understanding what our community goes through to a degree, or language and things like that. So let's talk about the idea of privilege and how it is, in fact, a real thing. Let's spell that out.
Yeah. So I've read over 50 personal finance books, and none have acknowledged the role that privilege plays in your money journey. They act like we all have the same starting line. And my book starts out with the first chapter saying a different starting line. And the way that I convey this is by, I created three archetypes: privileged Patty, average Amy, and first gen Gina. And I show through storytelling how their money journey and life growing up looks very different from childhood to life post college, because the more privileged people, and even the average middle white class American, they get the access to financial teachings from their family, or they get access to generational wealth. You know, I used to think it was only the one percenters that got generational wealth. And through my research, I learned no, just the average family that's been here, maybe they immigrated a couple generations ago, they've built some sort of wealth that they can pass on to family and help them give them a leg up in life. Where if you come from immigrant roots, our family comes here with nothing, right? So only for like a hope of their children doing better. So we start our line, like our starting line is different. I say we start in life in the negative. So if, for example, for me, I got this false sense of security when I graduated from college because I had achieved this thing that my parents had never gotten the opportunity to, right? This really hard thing of going to college and graduating. And I thought I was going to be set. I thought that life was, you know, I was going to be in level playing field to my peers who also had gotten the same degree, only to learn again that they had access to networks that I didn't. They had resources I didn't. And I think it's so important for my reader to understand that, because again, when you have this false sense of security, you're not going to prioritize your finances, because you're like, well, I did what I was supposed to do. I checked the box of going to college. I'm showing up to work. I'm paying my bills. But there's a lot of catching up to do, a lot.
Right.
So that's why I expose, how privilege plays a role in how we interact with money. And a lot of my readers have given me really good feedback about that chapter. I was scared that it might dissuade them or kind of like depress them to kind of hear how much support others get and we don't. But, you know, the response instead has been like, thank you for conveying it in this way, because I've always felt behind, but I didn't know why. And Now that you kind of gave us a language and exposed what other people go through, because I actually collect the stories from my privileged friends or my average Amy friends to see what kind of support they got that we never had access to. So these aren't made up stories. These are real stories from people in my network.
Yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense. I even think about my own experience, you know, like my parents, you know, were, you know, kind of the first ones to move into the suburbs, you know, of like our immediate family. Right. So they're the first ones to get into that suburban New Jersey. But like, my friend next door, who was a white kid growing up, whose dad was like blue collar, they had been there for generations. So even just on a small level of having connections within the town, they always like knew somebody when they needed help. Like their network was very much built in there where they can get, you know, help, and they can save money here. They can, you know, have an opportunity here, where this is our first generation being within, you know, the suburbs. We don't know anybody. We don't have those same connections. So we're still trying to figure those things out. And those are little things. But yeah, I think even, you know, you can't overstate how incredibly beneficial it is to even just have a network that can help you get a job coming out of college, you know, like, because that's difficult in itself in today's day and age of how competitive it is in the job market, that even just having that sort of leg up is bounds, you know, different than the average, you know, first generation immigrant who just came here and they're really the first ones graduating college, first ones trying to apply for jobs. Like they are, you know, starting on a different starting line, as you said.
Yeah. No, it's, and I didn't realize I had a different starting line when I went through my money journey. So that's why I was very passive. And it wasn't until my late 20s that I woke up and I said, whoa, I'm behind. So I'm really hoping that by exposing this to a younger reader, somebody in their early 20s or mid 20s, they're able to kind of get the clarity that they need to make progress with their finances.
Yeah. And even, you know, in general, like you talk about schooling, right? You talk about how personal finance is not taught in schools. And you have a statistic that you have in the book where you say only one in every four students have access to personal finance education in their high school, which is crazy when you think about all the other bullshit that is taught to us from K through 12 that we end up forgetting, that is thrown by the wayside. Right. And the most important thing, which is financial literacy at the end of the day, is not a part of our normal curriculum across the board. And I'm curious kind of your, you know, your experience, you know, where you were doing research for the book and seeing those things, kind of how eye-opening that was, or I guess more confirmation of what you already knew.
Yeah, it's something I already knew. I mean, I majored in economics in college and I still wasn't taught anything about personal finance. So then that meant that a first gen kid like myself, like I had no chance, right? Because they didn't teach it to me in school. And then my immigrant parents were in survival mode, just trying to adapt to this new country, learning a new language, leaving family behind. So they didn't have the capacity to even begin to understand the financial system and then teach it to me. So that meant that, again, these more privileged folks that didn't live through the immigrant experience anymore, because they've been settled in the US through several generations, they were able to pass on even basic teachings like avoid debt. This is how you safely use a credit card. This is what a checking account is. And the real privileged people get like taught to invest early. They open up a Roth IRA for them as soon as they can. Yeah. And they really set them up. And they receive large windfalls in the form of inheritances. So, it wasn't a surprise to me at all.
Sure. And you touch on the idea of parents living in survival mode. Let's talk about that a bit. What does that kind of look like from your own perspective?
Yeah, I mean, for me, that meant my parents working low-income jobs and trying to keep the lights on for a family of five. My mom has worked in retail her whole life. My dad always worked odd jobs. Like he used to wash cars. Then he was a cook. Then he was a custodian. He finally found out he didn't like having a boss. So he actually started his own business, and he's been self-employed for about 20 years. It's just a one man shop. He's a solopreneur, but he rents party supplies like tables and chairs and bouncy houses. So what I saw was, just like the goal was being able to make rent on time, being able to pay the bills on time, to keep the lights on, to use coupons and be able to have food to feed their kids. Like just surviving was an accomplishment in this new country, because the immigrant life is hard, right? So what I tell my reader is like, you know, your parents, that's all they had the ability to do to survive. But as mm-hmm. first generation college graduates, first generation professionals, we actually have the ability to do more, to build wealth mm-hmm. because we are making more money than our immigrant parents ever made. But we were never taught the tools on how mm-hmm. to manage this money, right? So until you learn, you're going to keep living that paycheck to paycheck cycle because you never learn how to effectively manage your money.
Yeah. And that actually speaks even to me where I think about my own parents, you know, where they put the grind in. My mom was a, you know, elementary school teacher and obviously not making much money teaching in the Bronx, and then eventually becomes a principal and is making good money, and my yeah. father working his way up. But we still were always in survival mode because they never knew what to do with their money, how to properly, you know, save and how to properly budget and things like that. So it was like when they got themselves to a higher pay grade, they just added more expenses onto to themselves, right? And it was basically the same thing. We might as well have been making, you know, garbage money and not being able to put food on the table because they yeah. didn't. They just kept spending more. And I think that is also kind of not spoken about enough, especially for our community where a lot of material things are sort of dangled in front of us as the goal.
Yeah.
And we also don't realize that once you get out of the daily grind and you start making more money, you also have to readjust and learn what to actually do with that money, or yes. else you will continue to stay in the same place, yes. even if your checks are bigger at the end of the month.
Exactly. Yeah, that's called lifestyle creep in the personal finance world. When, let's say you were making 80K at your job and then you got a promotion and now you're making 100K. So the mistake mm-hmm. people make is then they go on, oh, I got a 20K raise. Let me buy myself a new Mercedes, or let me mm-hmm. upgrade to a nicer apartment. And the trick instead, the financially smart thing to do is to keep the same lifestyle that you had before and to use that extra 20 grand to pay yeah. off debt, to build savings, to invest more aggressively, because that's how you're going to get ahead. But yeah, if you keep increasing mm-hmm. your lifestyle, then it's just going to cancel out, right? Like that raise mm-hmm. just went away.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That speaks to some of the stuff that you were mentioning that might be mildly controversial within our community, right? Where The one that stuck out to me was basically like Latinos and their obsession with cars, right? And,
oh yeah,
and that one, I'm
say
sure,
that with my chest. I stand by everything I wrote there. Yeah,
yeah. Let's talk about that because so many people are scared to say that part out loud because they feel like, oh, you end up sounding like you are whatever, a Trumper or something like that. And that's like a racist talking point. But it's like we have to have very, very real conversations as well. So talk to me a bit about your thought process of that part of the book.
Yeah. So I said, let's talk about the chokehold that cars have in the Latina community. And I say it, we're not the only ones, right? We're not the yes. only ones that are taught absolutely. That you display your value or your wealth by what you drive, right? It's but mm-hmm. I said, but it's very prevalent. At least I can yeah. speak for the Mexican community on what kind of car you pull up to in the family carne asada, like, oh, they have the new car or they have the big car, right? So, yeah. And I've seen how that obsession with having a brand new car, kept my family in this cycle of debt, because basically they would get a car, typically had a 5-year loan term. They'd uh-huh. pay off the car. As soon as they were done paying it off, awesome, I paid it off. Now I can get something new. I'm yes. not kidding you. And they would run to the dealer and get their new car. And they're, again, mm-hmm. you're back in debt, where people that know about money, again, similar to what we talked about with lifestyle inflation, with pocketing that 20K, you should be yeah. pocketing that money that you're saving now from not having a car payment and being smart with mm-hmm. it. Again, using it for savings, using it to invest more, using it to pay down debt. But if you're trapping yourself in debt again, you're not giving yourself that opportunity, right? So mm-hmm. I cite an example where I was very proud to tell my uncle, like, oh, I just made my last payment on my Corolla. You know, mm-hmm. I've had this bill for 5 years. I'm glad it's paid yeah. off. And he says, what's next? So, and I'm like, what do you mean? And he said, well, what kind of car are you getting next? I said, my car works perfectly fine. I'm not getting anything next. And he's right. like, well, yeah, but like you can afford to get a new car. Like, why wouldn't you treat yourself? So it's like yeah. a mindset. It's a mindset. Yes. I think I also mentioned that my dad has 4 cars. He lives by himself, but mm-hmm. he very much has 4 cars as a way to display and to, sure. to you know, to show the people on the block, like, I'm that guy with the four cars in my front yard.
Right.
So yeah. And it's mostly because our family doesn't have that financial education. And, you know, your net worth isn't something that's like implanted on your forehead and people can see on you. But they see what kind of car you roll up in, right? So they assume you make this or make that when really, you know, you're not about that life. You have a bunch of debt. You have no savings.
And it's tricky because
hood rich. I believe they call it hood rich.
Yes, exactly. That 100%. And it's tricky because it's like, you're right. You can't wear your net worth on your forehead. So if you don't have the confidence in yourself and haven't undergone that journey of like self love, you need to find a way to get that validation. And I've been there before. I made the mistake of getting a BMW I couldn't afford and it ruined me for a couple of years, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went through that lesson personally. But I think it's also people misconstrue what actual success is, right? Mm-hmm. And I think success is, of course, relative to each person. But when you look at the ultra wealthy of the world, yeah, they have a lot of the toys and the bells and the whistles, but what do they really have? They have freedom, right? That's what it really is.
Yeah.
Exactly. They're living life on their own terms. And sure, they have all the other shit, but the main thing that they are enjoying is the flexibility and freedom of being able to live life on their terms. And I think that's the part that we miss out on. We just see the Instagram post and we see all these things and we want to be able to live up to that and put that out there. Mm-hmm. And we're missing what the actual real goal behind that is. If you were to just dig, I think, a surface level deeper, you'd realize what is actually worth fighting for, as opposed to kind of that surface level success that is displayed on social media and everywhere else.
Totally. But yeah, I mean, if people don't have the financial knowledge to know how to do better, they're just kind of going to follow the crowd, and the crowd says you display your wealth by getting a new Mercedes, or you know, by pulling up in the nice car to the family party. So I thought it was something that was important to address. Again, we're not the only community that grapples with this, but I knew it had to be said.
No, 100%. That is a conversation that needs to keep happening and just be like blown up, because I think so many people are making wrong choices based upon seeking the validation of other people and kind of really shooting themselves in the foot.
Did you get to the section, the immigrant habits that keep us broke?
Yes, please. You want to break that down for us?
Yeah. So that one, I thought you were going to start with that one. When you said the car stuff, that's why I'm like, oh no, I stand by every single word. The immigrant habits that keep us broke section, that one I knew I could turn some people off. And I do acknowledge it by saying you cannot blame an individual for the systemic problem, you know, a history of colonization, of redlining, racist immigration policies. All these reasons are real reasons for why our community suffers from a wealth gap, right? But I said, but let's be real. Like, this book is about how individuals can change their behavior. So I'm going to point out some individual behaviors that our community tends to do that keep us, again, like in a hole. So I decided to pick on three things. I could have picked on a lot more. But I'm like, these I think will be the most eye-opening for my reader. The first one being how we throw extravagant parties. I don't know if that's been your experience growing up.
Not so much. Okay. No, I don't think Puerto Ricans, we don't, but also I didn't have a lot of family that grew up around me, so I can't really speak to it. But, but I've seen it. I've been to other friends.
Yeah, as a Mexican-American, I can say we go real hard on, I think Italians do this because I've seen it on TV. We go real hard on like baptisms, like a 1-year-old's baptism.
Sure.
Yeah. their first party, a quinceañera. I had a quinceañera, and that's the example that I share in the book, that my parents threw me a quinceañera. They didn't have the money for it. They charged it on a credit card for $15,000. And I had a lot of fun, and I still have the, you know, videography, and I relive that moment, and I have the pictures, and it takes me back. And obviously it was a milestone moment in my life, but I've done the math, and I've seen that if my parents had instead invested those $15,000 in the stock market in 30 years, this is a projection, right? But in 30 years, it could have grown to $100,000. So what I say in the book is like, although I had a lot of fun, you know, backing it up to Freak-a-Leak, I did not have $100,000 worth of fun. you know, sure, and my parents sure. are not where they should be financially in their old age. And they could mm-hmm. be had they not yeah. spent money on things that didn't matter, you know, but it's such a big part of our culture to throw parties and to celebrate. And that's beautiful. And I'm not saying we shouldn't celebrate. But what I'm saying is like there has to be a balance where yes. maybe we have a more budget friendly event. And then I say mm-hmm. if once you get your finances in order and you feel solid, you got savings, yeah. you don't have any debt. And if you want to throw a Kardashian style bash, go ahead and knock yourself out. Sure. But until you're sure. there, like you can't be throwing Kardashian style like these big right. elaborate balloons and everything else that they do, mm-hmm. you know, you're trying to keep up with Instagram when like that's not a reality.
Right. Sure, sure. and what were the other things out there? I think this is good information. I love this.
Yeah, the other
break
one.
Break down the other stuff.
The yeah. other one is valuing assets. Valuing stuff Button. Over assets. And again, this yes. is similar to the card. This is not just, we're not the only ones that fall into this trap of again, mm-hmm. like, you know, either the thinking that the clothes you wear or the car that you drive displays how wealthy you are. For my dad, mm-hmm. I cite an example of how he, I was asking him about his finances. And I'm trying to be proactive as he's getting older because I know I'm going to have mm-hmm. to provide some sort of financial support. And he's mm-hmm. like, Mija, I'm fine. Like, he's like, let me show you how I'm fine. I'm not kidding you. He has, so because we were doing FaceTime call. And he takes yeah. me to his closet and he's like, look at all these cowboy hats I got and look at all these boots I have. And I'm like, what's your point? He's like, Giovanna, each one of these cowboy hats is like $500. And I'm like, oh, he had like 10. And the boots, the same thing. They're nice leather and they're like $250 each. And I'm just like, oh. Yeah. So to him, that's his way of being like, I'm actually good. And I'm like, you're not. You actually don't have a cent and you don't even have a retirement account. You don't right. have a retirement account. Thank God you have some savings stuffed underneath the mattress. Thank God you have that. But yeah. So that's why it's important too, because I mean, when I was younger, that's what I was taught too, right? Like have mm-hmm. nice clothes, have this. And now I've learned to be more minimalist. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Embrace minimalism. And
sure.
This is a free TikTok shirt that I got from TikTok. I swear. Where's the TikTok logo? Right here.
There we go.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. Of course, I like to enjoy a shopping spree every now and then. But yeah, sure. I've learned, like you said, I have enough self-confidence to know that what I wear doesn't define yeah. the person that I am or my yes. values. Right. So that's number two.
Yeah. What was the third one? Was the third one for people?
The third one's a bit trickier, but again, it had to be said. The third immigrant money habit that keeps us broke is giving money that we don't have to family. We do
yeah,
it because...
So this is where I was going. Yeah. this is my other one. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. And again, that one, like, I think that was a hard pill to swallow for a lot of my readers. But in the way that I explained it, I think, you know, let me tell you, the book almost has 100 reviews, which is wild because it usually takes authors a year to achieve 100 reviews. So the fact that it's been out a little over a month and that it already is close to 100 just really shows like how this book has, you know, stuck with people and how it's impacted mm-hmm. people. And I knew I had to say that because culturally we're instilled to light ourselves on fire to keep other people warm because that's what mm-hmm. you do for family. You show up for family no matter what. And, but what happens is when we do that with our money, we forget about ourselves. We get ourselves into a hole, into either debt or we deplete our 401k funds to loan them out to family that needs support. And then we're stuck and broke. And then because they're mm-hmm. broke, who's going to help? We're all broke. Like who's going to bail me out, you know? So I say, even though it's seen as a beautiful thing to help family, and it is beautiful, and I give family money when I want to and when I have the ability to, but I say you need to learn how to have boundaries around your money because otherwise you're just always going to run in place and you're never going to mm-hmm. make any financial progress. So it's a big theme of the book, these boundaries.
Yeah. That one, it was like one of those things. So reading it, because I remember you talk about the idea of like what to consider when loaning your credit to someone, essentially.
Yeah.
Normalize not retiring your parents is the other thing as
well. That one was hard to write. Yeah.
But so even reading it, I'm like, you're absolutely right. But this feels makes me feel like a bad person by even thinking that I'm going to
consider. It makes you feel like a gringo, right?
Yeah, exactly. 100%. I feel like one of the kids who curses at his parents and it's normal. Like, I'm like, nah, that, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, this doesn't feel right. This feels so disrespectful. All right, I'll hop in here one more time. We'll take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
I love sharing positive tips with my listeners on everything from health challenges to relationship troubles. Because life happens, baby, but you got this. Hi there. I'm Honey German, and I know we can all use some positive energy these days. That's why I make sure to empower my community, because a bit of motivation and support can go a long way. And luckily, we have State Farm to support us. Like when you talk to a State Farm agent to choose the coverage you need, and they have the options to protect the things you value most. It's the perfect positive tip you need. State Farm is also a big supporter of the My Cultura Podcast Network, where we as podcast hosts get to share our experiences and stories. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you listen to podcasts.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
All right, we are back. Now, obviously, it's situational, right? And you're talking about, you know, considering helping your father, you know, towards the end of his working career. Mm-hmm. So what is kind of how did you make the math work for you when you... Mm-hmm. are thinking about, it's not your job to retire them, but you do also want to be somebody who can help them out since you are in a position to do so.
Yeah. And just to be clear, I don't tell my reader you should or shouldn't retire your parents. Sure. That's very much my reader's decision. But mm-hmm. I just encourage them to think about their options, right? So what I found from being a financial educator is that that's one of our community's biggest pain points of like, okay, mm-hmm. so I was able to achieve a college education. I have a good paying job, but my parents are still broke and they're getting older and they're not going to be able to work mm-hmm. forever. So I'm going to have to pay for the retirement, but like rent's expensive. I'm trying to save for a down payment. Like how am I supposed to achieve both, right? How am I supposed to grow my finances, but also be financially supporting my parents? So typically people fall into three buckets, and the three buckets are, I am going to do whatever it takes to retire my parents because my parents have never asked me for a dime. They've worked their whole lives. They worked themselves to a bone and they need me there. And they're all I got. I'm all they have.
Yeah.
The other bucket is, I adore my parents. So I'm grateful for what they've done for me. But they're adults and they should be taking care of their finances. You know, I'll mm-hmm. chip in every now and then and support them as needed, but I'm not going to shoulder that. That's something that they should have worked out as adults. And then mm-hmm. the last bucket is just like that person that's like, no, these are grown ass mm-hmm. adults. Why do I have to pay for their bills? I love mm-hmm. them. That doesn't mean I'm a bad child. It just means that I want to focus on my own money journey. So for me, I have both experiences because my parents are divorced. I'm very close to my dad and I do plan to, I fall in that second bucket where I'm like, I'm not going to fully retire you, but I will help you and get you the help that you need along the way. And I'm helping him now too by like, you need to downsize. Why do you have a two-story house if it's just you? You know, so having these mm-hmm. conversations so that it can be easier when he's older. And I share in the book, and it was hard to share, that I'm estranged from my mom. I've been estranged from my mom for 2 years now because she's physically abusive. So because I don't have a relationship with her, I'm sorry, I don't plan to retire her or cover those costs. Luckily, she has, I have two brothers, so hopefully she can rely on my two brothers. I mean, I just heard from my grandma, she's going to Cancun, my mom. Mm. And I'm just like, with what money? You know, so my mom's just been very reckless with money her whole life. And now to top it off that she's been physically abusive, I'm like, no. And I get criticized when I share this on social media, like, that's your mom and how dare you, like, you know parents aren't perfect. But again, I think it's a very individual decision. I have another friend who is also estranged. She's estranged from her father, and he's getting older, and I think they're amputating his, he has diabetes. You know how they will end up amputating like your foot or your toe or something. So she's like, oh, even though we haven't talked, I'm starting to feel guilt. And I'm like, you got to do what feels good for you, right? So like, even though you haven't had a relationship, if you are feeling for him, like, then contribute. That's in alignment with your values, right? But yeah, I don't like, it's always a debated topic whenever I post a video on social media about retiring parents where people are like, it's not your job. And people are like, it's absolutely your job. You owe everything to your parents.
Yeah, I mean, it's touchy. I get it. I think I get it on either side. I think, you know, personally, I also think it's the same way respect is earned, not just given. I think, you know, when it comes to relationships and things, if one party is not making a positive contribution to said relationship or trying to repair it, then that also sort of, you know, like anything else in life, every decision we make has a series of consequences, right? So if you are choosing to not get the help you need or not choosing to try to fix this relationship or mend it, understand that might mean I'm not going to be a part of your life, not only physically, but financially, not going to be somebody that you can rely on. So I get it. I think it's a lot of that like parental guilt that we are accustomed to being grown up with and you know, this sort of respect, but to the most extreme version of it. You know what I mean? Like, to the version of yourself that sacrifices yourself in the name of respecting these other people.
Yeah.
But it's tough. It's tough. But yeah, it's to each their own.
That's called people pleasing, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. That's 110%. That's exactly what it is. And I mean, and to be honest, I think what's also not spoken about a lot is what happens when you move on from the place of being like the broke 20-something year old or whatever, 30-something, you've kind of begun to move into the next phase of your life where you're beginning to get your things together. And now you have the luxury of opportunity. And this is when people start coming out of the woodwork because they see that you've gotten the higher job title or you bought the, you know, nicer house or whatever it might be, right? Your life is upgrading in some sort of way. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is just how important this period of your life is, because for me, what a lot of people don't realize, and I've had this happen, is I'm making more money than I was before, but now this is the time where I can become somebody who creates generational wealth, or I just sort of end up being in the same hamster wheel that we've been in for generations at this point. And you counting my dollars because I have a couple extra ones is going to hold me back from breaking this sort of trauma cycle of never having enough. And I think that's sort of the tough part that I think not a lot of people realize. Because also the government comes for you. Once you hit that middle ground, the government is coming for you heavy, and there's not as many tax breaks because you're not yet rich enough, but you're also not poor enough to get the breaks. So it's just, you're just getting fucking hit from every left and which way here. And I think that's the most difficult part right there. Like that is what I know I personally struggle with. And I know a lot of people, probably their family is coming at them during that time period as well.
Yeah. And I've seen challenges with friends where maybe one of the people in the relationship, you know, they have those strong boundaries with family and they're like, no, like you have to figure this out on your own. And then the other partner is like, no, my mom's calling. I got to give her the shirt on my back right now. And that'll cause conflicts too in relationships if you're not on the same page. It's tough, you know, setting boundaries is tough, but it's an act of self-love, right? And at first they can feel hard to implement because it's not something that we were taught culturally to have boundaries, any sort of boundaries. Like think about it, you know, how common was it for our family to give us these nicknames based on our weight, right? To comment on our body, to ask us, you know, when are you going to have kids? And now I think this generation is learning that it's setting boundaries is okay. Like, hey, don't can you not, can we not talk about that? Let's change the subject. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about that. That's a boundary, right? Like you're saying, I don't want to talk about this, or can you not comment on my body? Like that's something that I'm mm-hmm. self-conscious about. And the same thing needs to be done with your money. You need to have boundaries around your money if you want to be able to improve your situation. And once you are in that mm-hmm. spot, like you said, where you are kind of rolling in it and you have a little bit more money, and if you want to be more generous, then knock yourself out. I'm actually, I'm going to see my grandma. I haven't seen her since July. And I plan to just gift her $1,000 because I can, you know, and she raised me. She raised me. Yeah. I have the money. I won't miss it. And it's just because gift, right?
Right.
But there were times in my life, in my 20s, when she wanted me to give her a $50 allowance a month, and I couldn't afford that. I'm just like, I can't afford that. I don't make enough money. You know, so it's just important to kind of know what your limits are and to stay true to them.
Yeah, that's very well said. Well, Gigi, it's always good getting to catch up with you. And I think it's so important, the work that you're doing. I want to make sure I always give you your flowers, because a lot of the things that hold us back is because the language and the examples have been done by other people outside of our culture, right? And they don't speak to us. And, you know, they purposely sort of put these barriers in place that make it more difficult for us to gain the information needed to be better. And people like yourself are kind of meeting us where we are. You know what I mean? You're speaking our language, and you are, you know, in that way, allowing people to be far more open to gaining this information, to not be turned off by it, to not be scared. Exactly. That's the other thing, is like when you start throwing around big words and calculations and things, people automatically sort of get nervous. They don't want to look dumb. They turn their brain off and they don't gain the information they need to. So what you're doing in making this palatable and speaking our language and being unapologetically you with it is so incredibly important, and it's going to be changing people's lives. So I think it's amazing. So congrats on the book and all you're doing.
Thanks, Dramos. That means a lot. Thank you so much.
Of course. Absolutely. So where can people follow you? Obviously the book Cultura en Cash is out now. You can go pick that up anywhere you find books.
It's actually available on all major online retailers. So you won't find it at like a physical Barnes & Noble, but if you go to Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, bookshop.org.com, you can find it online. You can also request it from your local library. That's what I would encourage your listeners to do, to support a small business in your neighborhood and have them order it so that you can support their small business. If you go to culturaencash.com, you'll see all those links of where you can buy the books online, as well as you'll get access to the full introduction chapter of the book. If you're still kind of like, is this something that's my jam or not? You can get access to the full introduction chapter in PDF or audio file format if you go to culturaencash.com. And then my handle on TikTok is The First Gen Mentor. On Instagram is Gigi, The First Gen Mentor.
Amazing. Well, so good seeing you. I can't wait till we get to do this again at some point down the road. Maybe not to put pressure, the next book, the next project, whatever it ends up being.
Well, you know what? You know what I forgot to mention? Yeah. I have a podcast now.
That's right.
This. Yeah, I keep doing podcast interviews and I forget. So I launched the podcast. It's called Cultura en Cash, the same name as the book. It's an extension of the book. So it's a place where I'm diving deeper into the topics of the book and also giving career tips, sharing behind the scenes of my entrepreneur/creator journey, as well as having insightful conversations with expert guests. So I'm not in a place right now where my systems are set up and I can have guests, but maybe you'll be on mine next time, you know? So
listen, I'm always down. I love what you're doing. So I'm always down to be a part of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Dramos, one thing I want to say before we end is I'm really glad that you had me back on the show, because your podcast title is so catchy, right? Like Life as a Gringo. And like I said, this book, a lot of the things that people can implement from this book, they're going to be considered gringos for doing it, but we're not gringos. You know what we are? We're bicultural, you know? So I've had to own that identity for a long time. I felt like I wasn't Mexican enough. I felt like I wasn't American enough. And now I say with my chest, I'm bicultural. I'm both. I'm Mexican American. So no, I'm not going to know every slang word in the Mexican dialect, right? Like in Spanish dialect, because I don't live there. I don't, right?
Yeah.
And no, I'm not going to know everything about like these like historical important movies in the US, because that wasn't my experience either. So I'm a little bit of both. I'm a little bit of both. And yeah, this book is for bicultural Latinas trying to navigate their money with family in mind.
No, I love that. I love that you said that, because that's also one of the things that holds us back is this caste system that happens where it's like, oh, that's for white people. That's you're white if you look. It's like, listen, you got to get the information wherever it is now. Now, the beauty is somebody like yourself has studied it all over the place and is putting it in in a package that is, you know, exactly. But like, that's what I feel like my gift has been. I've never looked at, you know, people who don't look like me. I've like, what can I gain from this person? Even if I think they're an asshole, what's there to gain from the knowledge? And then I take that, I put it all together, and I bring it back to my community.
You know, so. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So don't get caught up on these dumb ideas of whatever this is, what Latin people do or whatever. This is what smart people do. And exactly. You gotta gain that information.
You don't have to be. That's internalized racism, right? If you think that only white people are worthy of having financial wellness, we are worthy of it too. And we just have to learn how to master the system.
Absolutely. I'm glad you added that. As always, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
Man, big shout out to my guest this week, Gigi, the first gen mentor, for just dropping these gems on here. Cultural, just like these are things that changed the fabric of our culture is what I'm trying to get at, right? With this knowledge, our generation can apply it and really set ourselves up to sort of change some of the cultural norms that I think have held many of us back. And I'll leave it there because I kind of want to touch on that as we summarize all we've been talking about today. Of course, we'll do that in a segment we call Conclusion Stew.
Time for Conclusion Stew.
Man, so I'm just going to quickly kind of summarize, you know, the conversation. I think I love, again, that she really tackled it on such a personal level as well. Not just sort of, you know, giving you what many books do, a very sort of dry, broad brush perspective of like where to invest your money, how to do this. But beyond that, really talking specifically to us and our unique experiences as a community and acknowledging sort of the uniqueness of many of the situations that we oftentimes find ourselves in, being first gen, right? Or coming from families who came here with nothing and were just trying to build a stable life for their children, right? And now we have a level of privilege that our parents never had. So what do we do with it, right? How do we utilize the opportunities that we have that they don't, right? And a lot of that is educating ourselves on how to not make the same mistakes they did, how to not fall into those same traps, and how to not, you know, create the same difficult situations that many of us grew up in. Like I started the podcast earlier saying, for me, in my family, one of the biggest points of contention was finances. And I know as I gotten older, I made it a promise to myself to say, I don't want to relive that. I don't want finances to be something that stresses us out. I don't want to be living in fear of, you know, the shoe dropping, so to speak, right? What happens if the car breaks down? Are we going to be okay? Or it just totally, you know, uproots all the plans that we had when something inevitably is thrown at us, as life tends to do. I never want to live that way. I want to always be able to, you know, tackle these situations in stride and of course be annoyed when an unplanned expense comes up, but not let it be something that slows me down, right? And also, as I did with repairing my credit, you know, hiring somebody to do credit repair for me, you know, that was a gift that I gave myself that allowed me to then, you know, get my first apartment, get my first car under my name, then eventually buy my own home. Like, these are all things that are possible for all of us. We just have to educate ourselves and put in some of the hard work that it takes to unlearn bad practices we might have, you know, inherited from our family. And then also educate ourselves on the things that we don't know, you know, the information that wasn't passed down to us because our parents weren't educated on these things. And I think someone like Gigi is doing incredible work with this book. So again, Cultura and Cash, go get that book. It is available now. Gigi, the first gen mentor, just out here dropping gems and blessing us here in April for Financial Literacy Month. So always a pleasure to have her on the show. And man, this book is really powerful. And I'm just so proud of the fact that someone from our community is out here having these conversations and is going to help change the narrative for the next generation. You know, so hopefully we're all in that together. Now, with that said, thank you all so much for tuning into today's episode. I will catch you Thursday for our Thursday Trends episode. Until then, stay safe. We'll talk soon.
Peace.
Life as a Gringo is a production of the Michael Dura Podcast Network and iHeartRadio.
Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up.
And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Professional wrestling, like real life, is full of surprises. Hi, everyone. It's Freddie Prinze Jr. And it's no surprise I can talk wrestling all day, any day. Kind of like how State Farm agents can talk insurance and help you choose the right coverage. When it comes to important insurance decisions, let State Farm support you with the coverage you need, backed with 24/7 support. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship, with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.